So, welcome back to a new One Man's Trash. I am purposely hiding myself for the big reveal. Are you ready?
That was the R stands for?
Yeah, big reveal. I love that you got your Texas Rangers jersey.
Yeah, it was supposed to be opening. Global, I feel, was supposed to open this week. So it's sad to... Oh, whoa! Fancy! Wow. What's up?
I figured
with that,
if we
buddy?
Were going to do a special day on signed baseballs and signed memorabilia, that you should dress the part.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for letting me know. As I'm sitting here looking like Joe Fan, and you're over
No,
there
you don't look like Joe Fan. You do not look like Joe Fan. All so, right. For today's One Man's Trash, it's super fun. We are going to take a look at some of our signed memorabilia that we have. If you know the premise of the show, it's basically show and tell. There is nothing I'm giving away today.
Yeah.
I do have the jersey.
Nice.
For cargo that I can give away. You just have to tweet us. And I do have the stealing gloves that I'm not
really?
Wearing. Right
you, so basically, you're just going to make somebody ask for them. And if they ask for them, they're theirs. Is it that simple?
Or do
you
want to...
I'll
let you think of the legit. Yeah, you're the smartest.
I got a couple things I wouldn't mind giving away as well as we kind of move on. I guess we probably should have had a better plan as far as exactly how we wanted to do that, whether we make people earn it, whether it's the fifth person to send a tweet. Me on Twitter, I have my notifications are muted from people that don't follow me. So if you aren't following me and try to send me a note, that wouldn't be fair because I wouldn't see it. So we'll have to, and maybe I have to release that for this little time being, but we got to get it. We got to get it figured out for sure.
How about the person that sends, I mean, if you say the person that sends a 100th retweet, the person that's like number 98 is not gonna do it.
That's right.
So they're like,
well, they may
wait.
Not see your mentions if you say fifth person to ask for it or something like that, or I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll think of it, and we'll let y'all know. How about that?
Okay. So do you want me to start, or do you want?
So let me just be clear. You said signed memorabilia. Are we not doing only baseballs today?
Well, it's the reason why I said signed memorabilia is because the first thing I'm going to show you, and the reason why I'm wearing the jacket.
All right. Well, go for it then. I mean, you look the nicest by far. By the way, real quick before we start, did you get your light that you were talking about? It hasn't showed up yet?
No, it's still not here. No, still waiting on it. Still waiting on it. All right. So growing up in Southern California, I had two broadcast voice in my head. And you know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. Number one was Vin Scully. I mean, Vin was the man. To have him say your name as a major leaguer.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
Is still like ranks as like my favorite thing that's ever happened to me. The other voice was Chick Hearns, the voice of the Lakers for a bunch of years. He was the close the refrigerator door. The eggs are getting cool and the jello is jiggling. It's awesome. I've never done that for a baseball game. But getting a chance to meet, you know, one of your idols when it comes to broadcasting, you and I never thought that we were going to end up being broadcasters when we were done playing baseball. We were going to play forever.
That's right.
So I had the chance to meet Vin Scully. Mm-hmm. And I'm wearing the same
look
jacket.
Look at you. Sharp.
I know. Look at I
not
need
as sharp as Vin, of course, in the nice yellow tie and pocket square. But that's pretty impressive, man. What year was that? That's a nice one.
This is from obviously like it looks like 7 years ago because look at my face.
You look super young in that picture.
Well, I also need to shave.
No, you don't.
It says, Ryan, great watching you play Vin Scully.
That's pretty cool, man.
And this is pretty cool. I'll send a better picture so we can show it. And the part that was so cool about this, and I have to share, I had this picture taken. For me back in 2015 when I had the chance to interview him at Dodger Stadium, and he gave me a great bit of advice. He said when he was coming up through the ranks, his very first broadcasting experience was at Fenway Park, and he was calling a state football game. He was given the opportunity from Red Barber. Everybody knows that Red Barber was the voice of the Brooklyn Dodgers for a bunch of years. And eventually Red Barber passed the baton to Vin Scully. And the day that Vin did this football game at Fenway Park, he was really feeling good about it. And it was like a fall day in Boston. It was really nice outside. And he goes to Fenway and he's assuming that he's going to call this game in the press box. And he didn't bring a jacket. Mm-hmm. And it ends up he's calling this game not from the press box, but on top of the press box. So he's standing outside and he's freezing his butt off. And he says it's not a great broadcast. It's not a good game. And the next day he goes and sees Red Barber, and he's assuming that that's the last time he's ever going to do a game. And Red says, you're going to get an opportunity to do more baseball games with me. And he was like, why are you giving it to me? He was like, because I knew that you were standing in the freezing cold unprepared, and you never once mentioned how cold you were or how cold it was.
Nice.
And something like that is really cool. And then for him to say, you know, the one thing that you have, CJ, that nobody else has is yourself, and to always be yourself. And that's why I really admire this guy. And I ended up getting this thing signed his very last weekend at Dodger Stadium when he had thousands of requests.
Oh,
Boyd,
yeah,
who's been his left-hand man for forever, was able to get Vin to sign this for me. So it's really, really special.
That's awesome, man. And it's a really good point, because we do have a tendency sometimes, I think, to do that. We have to be careful as broadcasters. If the environment maybe isn't great for us, not to complain about it on air, whether it back in the old, we'll say the old days of Globe Life Park, when it would be 105 degrees first pitch and the windows are open and you're sweating your tail off. And it could be, it was pretty uncomfortable to call a game in those spots and to try to make sure that you're having good energy the entire time, not bringing the fans down with you regardless. Or if it's super cold, I had to call a college game one time. It's like 40 degrees. There was no press box. We were basically sitting in the stands with a tent over. So it was miserable. And if you're not careful and you relay that to fans, and that's great advice, it ruins the broadcast. So pretty amazing that Vin Scully knew that early in his career. And then it was recognized, right? So that's something he can pass forward, which is really important. That's a big part of our business, is the people you have a chance to talk to that give you some advice to carry it forward, man. So that's awesome. One of the best to do it. So along those same lines, then I'll bring up my first baseball. Not quite a broadcaster, but certainly a voice, especially to a certain part of the country that people absolutely loved. As you know, I grew up a Yankee fan and going to games at Yankee Stadium, and it was called the voice of God when you went into Yankee Stadium, and that was when you got a chance to listen to, I'll see if we get where we go, Bob Shepard, of course, you know, the very famous,
wow,
now batting number 23. And then, of course, with Derek Jeter continuing even after Bob had passed away, to still have the one guy where Bob Shepard still called his name every time he came to the plate.
Now batting for the New York Yankees, the shortstop, number two, Derek Jeter.
Jeter was the only one, which was awesome. For me, it was Mattingly as a kid, hearing that voice and saying Don Mattingly. He actually taught public speaking at St. John's, where I went to college. I did not get a chance
did
to
you
take
go?
It. No, I didn't take his class. I took public speaking, but I was not in his class. But so I sent a ball up probably sometime around 2000. And, you know, I had somebody go up to the press box for me and ask him if I could have an autograph. And he's a legend. But I think even then he was a little bit surprised that someone would ask. And he came down looking for me. I wasn't there. I didn't know this until after the fact, because he just wanted to talk to me. He knew I was a St. John's guy, to send a baseball up and ask for his autograph. But I unfortunately missed him. We never had that opportunity to cross paths and have that awesome picture like you have. But this is an important one for me because it goes all the way back to my childhood, kind of ties it all together. Yep. And that voice that we all, for us, at least as Yankee fans at the time, that's the one that you imitated in the backyard, right? When you're sitting there going through your lineup, wherever you hit in wiffle ball.
When you pretend to be Don Mattingly, you're going.
I pretend to be me, and I hit after Mattingly before Winfield. But anyway, so that's a cool one for me, and kind of how we all did it. So fun one, good tie-in. So kind of unplanned that we both had a broadcasting tie-in.
I love that. This one, I've talked a lot of times about my mom. My mom is, you know, the reason why I ended up playing baseball. I've shared that she signed me up. She was from Guatemala, and she had Fernando mania. She had Fernando fever. And what was great about it was that she was the big Dodger fan. And eventually I became a massive, massive Dodger fan. And so this next baseball, it's not signed to me.
Mm-hmm.
This was signed to my mom.
Oh, wow.
This is my mom's name was Esperanza. It was Essie for short. And it says, to Essie, good luck. And it's written by Tommy Lasorda.
Nice one.
And this was really cool because it kind of shows that, you know, baseball and how you get impacted, it's not always a love affair from just the kid. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's such a love affair with your parents and that connection that they passed down to you. And, you know, I always look at that baseball and it gives me goosebumps because it's like, I ended up fulfilling a dream that was of mine. Mm-hmm. But to see, you know, because she enjoyed it so much when she was around that, you know, it was really cool to see, you know, her son's career in her eyes because she was still such a fan of the game before I became a fan of the game. So that baseball, I'll send a picture of that to you too.
Did she really give that to you, or was that just kind of something you inherited after the fact? How did you guys treat it?
Yeah, I inherited after the fact because this used to sit on my mom's desk. Yeah, yeah. This was a big deal to her. And what's really funny is when you start looking at the baseball, this was a Little League baseball, an old Spalding ball.
Oh, that's funny.
So I don't even know how she got it. I don't know if it was like being sold at whatever. It was like an event that she went and she met Tommy there. So
accidentally, again, I think we can make a little bit of a connection. So this is this next one for me is also actually a Spalding baseball. See, we get the light up. There it is. Now,
yeah,
it's
got it.
Kind of a little bit of a fake, though, as I bring it up here.
Is that from the Sandlot?
Nope. You see it there, right? Official National League ball. Is that Ford Frick on there?
Ford Frick.
So this is actually a replica, but this was a baseball. Gosh, I'm going to get in trouble that I took off the set of 42. You know, I had a small role in the movie 42, and so they had to do all these replica baseballs, even though I don't know if they ever did any real tight shots. You know, I played
Dutch Leonard.
A pitcher in that. So anyway, so I grabbed this one at the last second. It wasn't one of my original ideas, but I have a bunch of baseballs. I have my signed ones back here, but I have some other ones in my locker. Not signed ones, but just, you know, it could be an American League, a National League ball. Remember, those balls used to be separate. When I first broke in the league, it was two different baseballs with two different colored logos. I have the college balls up there and then a bunch of different stuff from Dominican and Japan and Korea. So that's up there with my kind of sort of game balls, even though it's not real. It is a replica. All right, but the one that I was going to play. Oh, good. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I'm still mad that Dutch Leonard was not 6'4" and left-handed. He's actually 6' and right-handed,
yeah,
which makes no sense how you even got the part, other than your beautiful smile.
Well, and he was also, I think he was a knuckleballer, and I throw a pitch that looks like it's about 100 miles an hour to knock down Jackie. All right, this one, it's not sitting here. I tried to take it back out. It's not sitting in here right. Let's get you let me take a look at this one here. I think I've talked about this one on a show before, but that is Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker. And what this ball is, this was a foul ball that I got from the game that they broke the all-time record for teammates. Most games played together with the same two guys on the field as teammates, and a ball rolled into the dugout during that game. I was like, oh, let me keep this one. That's kind of a cool moment. This was back in 1995. I said, man, let me have them both sign this thing. I think I've told you in the past that I gave away a Kirby Puckett baseball because I felt like there was a Twins fan that might appreciate it a little bit more than I did, so I just kind of gave it away. This one has crossed my mind, but I'm not there yet. Because I play with both of these guys. I like both of these guys. They're tremendous.
Who are you going to give that away to?
Well, you know, I thought, is there, you know, think about Tiger fans and someone that would really, really appreciate something like this. But it's not going to happen. Not yet, at least. I'm still holding on to this one because it has a little bit of a special place still in my heart. But I again, to me, that's a little cool one. It's not a record that people talk about too often, right? The most games played by teammates. But especially nowadays, and we're never going to see something like that broken the way that players move around the way that they do. But anyway, I thought it was a cool moment in time, and I tried to capture it.
Sweet Lou and Alan Trammell. Sweet Lou will be in the Hall of Fame eventually, I hope.
I hope so, too.
Speaking of Hall of Famers, I went to a game when I was about 9 years old at Dodger Stadium, and this player had probably the coolest nickname at the time. Mm-hmm. So he played for Chicago Cubs. You want to guess who it is? Hall of Famer, ran like the wind, was an MVP on the worst team in baseball, which doesn't happen to you. It was the Hawk. Oh, and I was at a game where he hit two home runs in a game off Tim Belcher. Mm-hmm. And I think it was May 5th, 2000. And, or 1989. So look that up. I promise it's there. And you and I, we've asked for autographs from people before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Like we've gone or we asked a clubhouse attendant to send a baseball over.
Yeah, yeah.
This one I went up and asked specifically to the Hawk. Mm-hmm. And I don't usually get too nervous.
Yeah.
But I was really, really nervous for this one.
Uh-huh.
And here's Andre Dawson.
Whoa, that is a big league signature too, buddy. What? That is as pretty as it gets right there. Are you serious with that?
Yeah, he's
that's
got good
gorgeous,
handwriting.
Man. That is gorgeous.
It was gorgeous. He was on the field with the Marlins. And I was scared to death to go ask him because it was a hero of mine. He was one of those guys where you saw him play.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's the best player in baseball by far.
Yeah.
You know, that's by far the best player. And he stood out in my youth. I always pretend to be Andre in the backyard. I was always the Hawk. That or I was a Dodger. Like, I always traded forever in my mind to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So he would hit the middle of the lineup. But, like, I still get nervous. Like,
yeah.
I'm still a kid, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm a big leaguer, but I'm going up to this guy, and I'm completely nervous going, like, Mr. Hawk, can you sign this for me? And he was like, yeah, no problem. How are you? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That's amazing,
it's
man.
It's funny when you start thinking about stuff like that.
Well, it's cool, too, because, like you said, I mean, the idea of and looking at that autograph, there are a handful of guys that really put that kind of time in. Right, Derek Jeter was kind of known for that, pretty solid autographs. And, I mean, it's understandable. It doesn't matter who you are. You and I even know this, right? It can be a little bit daunting how often you get asked to sign stuff and, you know, to scribble one once in a while or more than once in a while. It's reasonable that that happens. And to think that the guys that put that kind of time in to give a real solid autograph every single time, it's something I really appreciate, man. But that was pretty, man. That was a really nice
Do you have a good autograph?
Me personally, yeah, it's average. It's average. I mean, the same thing. Sometimes I'll put a little bit more effort in than other times, but I probably should. Like, when I see that, from a Hall of Famer to that level, knowing how many times he's been asked for his autograph, we really have no excuse for not putting in a little bit of
unless you
effort.
Have 10 letters in your last name. How many do you have? You have nine,
nine,
right?
Yeah, nine. So yeah. That's also a fair point because that can be a little bit of a pain. All right, so this somewhat similar, same idea, not a Hall of Famer, but one that I got a little bit nervous. I may have told this story on our radio show before, Loud Outs, every Saturday, 10 o'clock Eastern and 8 Mountain. But I pitched a game, my second or third game in AAA. So I drafted 94, I'm in AAA in 1995, and I got a chance to pitch against Dave Rigetti. So again, I wore 19 in high school. We talked about that. It was Guidry and Rigetti and Mattingly at that point that were kind of my guys as I was getting a little bit older. I was absolutely blown away by the fact that I was actually going face-to-face with him. He's trying to make a comeback toward the end of his career. I'm kind of on my way up. And all of a sudden, I'm pitching against Dave Rigetti. We're both making starts on opposite sides. To me, that's like completely absurd. You know, put yourself in, you know, whoever you are. If you're 16, 17 years old right now, and you're a, you know, an Astros fan, and Justin Verlander's your guy, and all of a sudden now you get drafted, I have a chance to pitch against him as he's still trying to hang on. That's kind of what it was like. For me, so I have my Dave Rigetti baseball, but here's how I got that baseball. So I pitched against him. And so the next day, I mean, it was a huge deal at home. Like, friends are like, what? You pitched against Dave Rigetti? That's ridiculous, right? And I threw a good game. I think I threw 7 shutout, did not get a decision. He's out there, like, running his polls the next day at the old Indianapolis ballpark, which was, you know, the old one. They got a nice victory field there now in downtown, but they had an old kind of crappy ballpark, actually, where 8 Men Out was filmed. And so he's running his polls.
Worst acted baseball
movie. Oh, come on. I love that movie. Don't get me started again. So with that being said, so this is really bad, right? So he's running. I literally, and I'm saying like you, I'm nervous. Should I really be doing this? But I mean, it was just like such a big deal. And so I kind of stopped him in the middle of running his polls, which is really bad, Bob.
Yeah, you don't do, right?
Terrible.
You don't do. Is that like poor pitcher's etiquette?
It's really poor etiquette. So I kind of stopped and I talked to him for a little bit and I was like, I said, listen, I'm really sorry to bother you with this, but I said, everyone is home really excited. I grew up a huge Yankee fan. This is such a big deal to me. I can't believe I had the opportunity to pitch against you, yada, yada. I followed your career forever. I wore 19 in high school because of you, et cetera, et cetera. And he was really kind and really nice and he signed in that blue Sharpie for me. It's actually a AAA American Association baseball, which I don't even think that, you know, that league doesn't even exist anymore. And he had said to me, he goes, hey, I'll tell you what. He goes, keep pitching like you did in this last game, and you'll be in the big leagues in no time. And I got called up like a couple of days later, which is kind of like a little icing on the cake for me. But that was a cool moment. You know, as we get older, I know you said you still had the Andre Dawson one, and those still exist, but some of that stuff starts to fade away, right? If you're fortunate enough to play professionally, to be around big leaguers, like even though there's still some moments that you have, some of that stuff does start to go away because these are your contemporaries, these are your teammates or your coaches or, you know, their coaches, and we're broadcasting like, oh, I love that guy as a kid and, you know, he's still around. So it starts to fade a little bit, but there are certain, I think, guys where it doesn't. And this was one of them for me, and that continues to be a cool moment. So Dave Rigetti is my third, I guess kind of fourth if you count the 42 baseball. I still have one more. Are you done?
I got one more.
All right. Sweet.
This one was in jest. Now, when I was with the Colorado Rockies, and one of my teammates in college, his name was Skip Schumacher, and he played for the St. Louis Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And Skip knows how much I love Jim Edmonds. I was a big Angels fan as much as I was a Dodgers fan, and Edmonds was my guy. That was the, I mean, like, yeah. Who didn't? I loved Andrew. And by the way, I love all center fielders.
Sounds like
if you, if I was to bust out my baseball memorabilia, it's virtually like every center fielder that I could imagine. But Jim Edmonds was a special one for me because I loved how he played, and Skip because he was a teammate with him and. 2005 with the Cardinals, he had a relationship, and you knew how much I was like crazy for. I was like, "That's Jim Edmonds."
Nice.
I was like, "Yeah, no problem." So the next day, I come to the ball field, and you know, we're in Colorado, and sitting in my locker, it's a baseball signed by Jim Edmonds
with a little note on there.
It says, "To Ryan, keep working. You will get there, Jim Edmonds." And
cool.
You know, it's a little tongue in cheek, but it's also really, really cool to get some encouragement from somebody that you really admire.
Yeah, no doubt.
And to see it on your desk, you know, like when you come to your locker and you have a present from another teammate or from somebody across the way, and they were thinking about you, it shows how good of a teammate Skip was. But it also, like, these things matter, and it, like, I hope if there's any ball player out there watching this stuff, like. Little notes like this, the handwritten note, means the world to us.
It does.
Means
it. And I think that's something that's easy to lose sight of as a player. And I didn't realize that really towards the end of my career, even for guys like us, right? Even if you weren't a superstar, but you're in uniform, those couple of seconds you take to maybe sign an autograph for a fan, say something nice, you remember those things. Those things really stick with you until a better player comes along and does the same thing for that guy. Then they forget about you, but that might never happen, right? That might never happen. So you gotta make sure you take
advantage. You're like,
advantage.
CJ! Take advantage. CJ! Roger! Roger Clements!
Exactly. That's kind of how it goes down.
Have you ever had somebody take the ball away from me to try to give it to the better player?
I don't think they've taken it away from me, but I've definitely been in that spot where they're like, oh, you know, you kind of see them change their priorities a little bit. I get it. I would, too. If I was sitting in their position, I'd be more interested in getting that guy's autograph than mine. All right, last one for me, and this was kind of a fun one. This really is what started autograph collecting for me even to begin with. This was one of the first autographs that I ever got in 1994. And you don't generally ask for the autograph of someone that you dominate on the field. But I wanted to.
Oh.
And listen, I appreciated his efforts and he was trying his best. But he just had a really difficult time. And I don't know if you'll be able to recognize that autograph there. A little tough to see. I'll give you a little hint that might help you out a little bit. This is a, I mentioned it was my first year in baseball. That is a Southern League baseball. Southern League is double A. I was playing in Chattanooga, Tennessee at the time. Any guesses? Any guesses?
Manny Ramirez?
On this Hall of Famer right here?
No, he's not.
Guesses. I'll give you one more hint. He's in a Hall of Fame. He's got tons of championships under his belt. They are about to release a 10-part special, I believe, on him coming up here.
Michael Jordan? You chopped him up?
A Michael Jordan baseball that I got when I faced him. You talk about cool moments, man. Like right when I signed, he's in that league. I go from playing at St. John's to playing in a league that included Michael Jordan. So I sent a couple of baseballs over. Only one came back. I should be grateful that I got even that one. But you talk about being starstruck, dude. Like I tell people all the time, for me, standing on the mound or being on the field, the only two times that I was like, ooh, wow, was facing Michael Jordan. Like I'm standing there, dude, this guy's 60 feet away from me when I'm 21 years old and I got to try to get him out. I'm like, that's Michael Jordan, dude. Like, that was no doubt the biggest one. Forget about all the great baseball players that I faced over the years. And then Frank Thomas actually was the other one. And Frank Thomas, not so – and, of course, I admired him and got to work with him later. And I'm a good dude. Just got a text from the other day. Really like Frank a lot. We've had some fun moments in broadcasting together. But it was because he was so big. Like, he really stuck out. Like, how big he was in the box absolutely blew me away. So those were the two moments where I found myself standing on the mound going, holy crap. That's Michael Jordan, and that's Frank Thomas. So, yeah, fun moments for me. I do have a little video. I'll see if it's really grainy, I think, that my dad took from the first base side. I'll try to drop it in here.
You carved him up. Did he get a hit off you?
Well, so here's the deal. Here's the truth. I faced him five times. Punched.
Number 45, Michael Jordan.
Him out twice, and in typical CJ Nikowski fashion. I walked him 3 times. I think it's because I was overwhelmed again by the fact that it was the greatest living basketball player standing just 60 feet away from me.
Do you think it, like, from your baseball sensibilities, if that guy, if Michael was given an extra year or two, could he have made it to the big leagues?
I don't know if he could have made it to the big leagues, but he definitely held his own. I know some
big hole in the sling up in it. I mean, yeah, he's tall, like tough big, to hit big like hole that, in the middle.
Man, when you're that big, no doubt, man. But I will tell you this: it's almost like Tim Tebow. You know, is he ever going to be a big leaguer? Probably not. But he's made strides, and he certainly put the effort in. And it hasn't been, you know, a joke for him. It's something he's taken seriously. So, you know, had he started a little bit earlier, I think for Michael Jordan, maybe. I don't think he ever would have been an impact big leaguer, but he may have had a chance to at least get there if he really wanted to put that time in. But what a cool thing for the Southern League. At the time, I imagine it'll be part of his story in that 10th quarter. I think it's going to be on ESPN, right? I believe it's coming out on April 19th. So a couple of weeks. They moved it up, apparently. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And I'm sure I'll be in it. I got to believe he's going to mention me.
All right, that will do it for our show. One Man's Trash. We'll be back at it later on this week. What do you want to do for the next one?
So I had an idea. We'll see if you want to do. I don't know how. Now you had the Vin Scully thing, so this may have ruined it. I should have thrown it out to you earlier. What about things that are framed?
Oh, to save it?
No, things that are framed. You think you can get 3 things that are framed that'll be worth talking about for you?
I got 3 things right behind my shoulder that are.
All right.
Yeah, first point. That are right. 3 things that are framed.
Let's go
right there.
Things that are framed next time.
Okay, things that are framed. I'm looking forward to it. All thanks right. For paying attention, everybody.